Hey, what's happening? Time for our truth about markets here in London, Stan, Stacy.
Is London Stan now? Yes, it's Resonance 104.4 FM, and this is the Truth About Markets with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Well, it's been another fantastic week. I guess the Dow has passed through 15,000. So the people are happy. The people of America are happy. And some places in like Los Angeles and Las Vegas, house prices have actually passed in certain area the 2006 peak. So they're happy with that. Over in China, Max, we see the Chinese housewife who we're calling Mrs. Wang. She's displaced Mrs. Watanabe as the most major economic force in the world. And she's bought 300 tons of physical gold in the past 2 weeks. To put that into context, this big sell-off in gold happened because Western investors dumped the ETF GLD, and they dumped 271 tons over 4 months.
So, yeah, Dow Jones at 15,000. New high on the Dow Jones. Also, new high on the margin debt. The margin debt's never been higher. This is the money one borrows to buy stocks. And so this is the pattern over the past 30 or 40 years, is you have the increase in debt, which leads to periodic new highs in markets, followed by crashes. And then more money is created, and more debt is created, and you have a new high again on markets. So whether you go backwards through the cycle, before this we had the real estate crash, which prompted this current quantitative easing and money lending cycle. Before that we had the dot-com crash. Before that we had the Asian currency crash. And that brings us back, I think, to the stock market crash of 87. Then you had the peso crash, et cetera. So this is the current cycle. Now, it's the old story about if you're selling picks and shovels to the miners versus being a miner. So people like Warren Buffett, who are doing quite well, they're selling the picks and shovels out there. Their cost of capital is less than zero. They take positions in huge companies, and when the crash comes, they gobble up more assets at cheaper prices. So they like the crashes. They like the crashes better than they like the highs, and this is the cycle that continues. So we're at now the peak of the cycle. So the question is, how much of this where will this go for how long before the guaranteed flip side of this, which is always the crash, because there's no underlying capital formation, there's no underlying capital expenditures or CapEx, there's no income growth, it's very slow, less than 1%, there's no savings rate. So there's no foundation. So now this is the post fiat currency era, started in 1971 when, for the first time in history, an experiment was tried where gold or anything tangible was not backing any currencies anymore. It became purely trading against each other, fiat against fiat. So this is the cycle we've been in.
Yes, we see this sort of mentality we're talking about that the likes of Warren Buffett like crashes because they could buy some more of what they're trying to accumulate while the price is lower. He's joined Twitter this week, and I thought it was funny that he came out. He had to come out on Friday, I guess, and say no, he wouldn't be selling his shares of IBM because I guess he owns a big position in IBM. And I see this all the time on Twitter that for me, with gold or silver or Bitcoin, when the price is rising, you never hear from shriekers. You just hear people, I want to buy, I want to buy, I want to buy. And then the price goes down and you hear shriekers say, are you going to sell? Are you going to sell? Did you lose? You lost, you lost. So most people chase the price, always a few steps behind, losing on the way up or down. And you see this now with these Chinese housewives who there's been a big crash in gold. And they've been accumulating, like Warren Buffett, big, huge positions in gold.
Yeah, well, the IBM story, from what I gather, the IBM is now caught up in a corruption scandal. And so I think the question is, would you sell your IBM now that they've been caught in a corruption scandal? But no, of course not, because no, there hasn't been a corruption scandal that has deterred Warren Buffett from building up a position. Obviously, he has a huge stake in Wells Fargo. They bought Wachovia Bank. Wachovia Bank was involved in $400 billion worth of money laundering. Then there was a Chinese, I think it was a Chinese oil company a few years back that was caught in a massive scandal that he did end up selling, but not for the scandal reasons. I think he just said it had reached his price objective. That was a topic of one of his annual meetings a couple of years ago. And so that's not happening. Now, as far as a Chinese housewife goes, Mrs. Wang buying gold, this is an interesting phenomenon because, as you say, most people are price chasers. They sell at the high, or I should say they buy at the high, and they get sold out at the low. And we've seen that in gold now for 5 or 6 years. Every time the price goes down, people panic sell and then complain that they're losing money. Mm-hmm. When the price goes high, they say, well, it's a bubble. I would never want to buy it. It's in a bubble. So they end up not owning any, or they end up losing money. Those people who buy in the dips have been over the past 12 years buying money. It should important to note all this excitement about Warren Buffett and his stock Berkshire Hathaway. Over the past 12 years, it has a net gain in that stock price of a whopping 9% over 12 years, whereas gold has increased by, depending on what currency you're looking at it, over 450%. So it has clearly beating the pants off any stock except for maybe Apple. Certainly against Berkshire Hathaway stock. And so this is this is a very positive sign that people are buying the dips in a big way, or Mrs. Wang, you know, the Chinese housewife, is buying gold in a big way. And because the Chinese, you know, this is a huge group. I mean, it's like the Japanese housewife, Mrs. Watanabe, that was always so huge in determining currency values of a few years ago. Now we have a new player, and I think it's going to be continue to be a big factor.
Well, you mentioned that Warren Buffett, never lets a scandal shake him out of an investment, and that brings me to J.P. Morgan, because he, of course, recently said that Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, is one of the best CEOs ever. And here's the headline from Friday: JP Morgan caught in swirl of regulatory woes. See, this is how the New York Times puts, the frankly criminal behavior that then follows in the article. Government investigators have found that J.P. Morgan Chase devised, quote, manipulative schemes that transformed, quote, money-losing power plants into powerful profit centers. So, manipulative schemes. And that one of his most senior executives gave, quote, false and misleading statements under oath. That senior executive is, of course, the British citizen who lives here in London, heads J.P. Morgan's commodities desk, essentially. And that's Blythe Masters. The 70-page document takes aim at top executive Blythe Masters, a seminal Wall Street figure. Ms. Masters is known for helping expand the boundaries of finance, including the development of the credit default swap, which, Max, you referred to as the credit defraud swap in this week's Kaiser Report, a derivative that played a role in the financial crisis. The regulatory document cites her supposed knowledge and approval of schemes carried out by a group of energy traders in Houston, and then that she falsely denied under oath her awareness of the problem. So, Max, here is the same woman we've been charging for the last few years as being involved in the manipulation of the silver markets. She came out at the peak of the crash JP Morgan buy silver campaign. We forced her out of hiding. She had never really done an interview before, and she came on to CNBC and said that there was no such thing as them manipulating silver markets because they're just hedging a position from another one of their clients.
Yeah, it ticks all the boxes because, first of all, you have in Houston and the energy markets being manipulated. So that brings back the Enron, the ghost of Enron, which, of course, took that company down to zero. We mentioned that JP Morgan was the next Enron. We've said that several times on our various shows for the same reasons that they are engaged in market rigging, market fraud, off, balance sheet fraud. So that certainly looks like it's happening. Then you have the point toward silver, gold manipulation, which they claim they're not involved with, but somehow they're involved in credit default, pricing manipulation, LIBOR manipulation, balance sheet manipulation, London Whale manipulation, MF Global manipulation. So it would be remarkable if the silver manipulation was the only market of the dozens and dozens of markets that they routinely manipulate every single day. Why would they have a bias against manipulating silver when clearly the silver market is the one market which would upend the entire matrix of fake, phony paper nonsense that they are involved with? Number two, they have, of course, this Blythe Masters is one of the very few women on Wall Street. It's 99% men. She's one of the very few women. And usually people say when you criticize her, well, you're just sexist. Well, apparently that's no longer the argument. She's clearly involved per this complaint, despite her gender, in a criminal racket and fraud. So that's the point number two. Point number three is that we've got our buddy Pierre Jovanovic, who we've interviewed several times. He wrote a book, The Blythe Masters, Unauthorized Biography, which talks about her history as being involved in the center of the credit default swap market, which is the key linchpin market of the entire 30 years of fraud. Now, going forward, what will happen? Well, there's two outcomes. Number one, the company will take the Goldman Sachs approach and say, well, we're making markets and we're providing liquidity. It's systemically important. And if you say another word, we're going to crash this market. So back off, which will give her immunity from prosecution based on the fact that she can crash, pull the pin on the market and blow it up at any moment, which they've done a few times. Number two, they simply throw her under the bus and say they fire her, they get rid of her. So that's the big question I have in my mind this morning, whether or not she'll be forced to walk the plank, which, by the way, I just read pirates never force people to walk the plank, apparently, but I still like that image. And or number one, they simply take she's systemically important, she's too big to prosecute, and back off approach. What are your thoughts?
Well, Chris Whalen tweeted me and he said that, the front page of the New York Times had another piece about J.P. Morgan, and it the sense is that somebody is about to be ousted, somebody important. She is one of the most important people at J.P. Morgan. She's probably one of the five most important people in the world of finance over the past 20 years. She did invent the credit default swap. And people, most ordinary people don't understand the significance of that so-called invention and what it's done to the world of global finance. But it has radically altered it. Her invention changed the entire face of finance. Now, going back to this energy manipulation story, this also, just like their silver manipulation story, it comes out of Bear Stearns. Because just they inherited Bear Stearns' massive short position on silver, and they've taken it to new levels. Blythe Masters has innovated and invented new ways to get around the problems in this position. She invented the credit default swap with ExxonMobil when the Exxon Valdez crashed. Here we have a situation where J.P. Morgan, this case arose, according to the document, after the bank's 2008 takeover of Bear Stearns. It gave the right to J.P. Morgan to sell electricity from power plants in California and Michigan. It was, however, a losing business that relied on inefficient and outdated technology, or as J.P. Morgan called it, quote, an unprofitable asset. This was then handed to Blythe Masters to sort out. Yet under pressure to generate large profits, the agency's investigators said traders in Houston devised a workaround, adopting eight different schemes between September 2010 and June 2011, the traders offered the energy at prices, quote, calculated to falsely appear attractive to state energy authorities. The effort prompted authorities in California and Michigan to dole out about $83 million in excessive payments to J.P. Morgan, the investigators found. The behavior had harmful effects on the markets, according to the document. J.P. Morgan disputes the claims, arguing that its trading was legal. So, again, this sounds like the interest rate swaps that have bankrupted municipalities, cities, and towns across the world, sold by J.P. Morgan. They look attractive on the surface. They they con people. This is a classic con. Go back to the snake oil salesman days. You offer a too good to be true price that ends up costing you many times more than had you just confronted your financial situation honestly and paid what it cost to insure yourself or to buy energy.
Well, it's good to keep this in mind with the new highs in the stock market, because the large positions in the stock markets that are now benefiting from the new highs, they have bought insurance on these positions using things like credit default swaps, where it costs pennies, fractions of pennies on the dollar to give them insurance in case the market were to collapse. Then these positions would be hedged, so the large players would not lose anything except the cost of the insurance, which would be less than a penny per dollar. And so this is why this market's important to the big players out there, is because it gives them a hedge, and that they can borrow money from the government at 0%, buy shares and stocks and options, watch those shares increase dramatically, and when it blows up, they maintain most of those gains because they've bought this insurance. Now, do pension funds own this type of insurance against loss? No. It's a matter of fact that it's against the law. They can't own any of these types of derivatives or credit default swaps in a pension fund, so they're completely exposed. The losses are always borne by the many, and I just saw another story about how pension funds are the cost of managing a pension fund. It typically is something like you quoted 60% of the performance, or 60.
I'll tell you, because I know it off the top of my head. It was the 401k plans. These are the plans in America, your pension plan that replaced the previous pension plans that used to be guaranteed pension benefits. These are you're managing your own, pension in America. Well, it turns out that 63% of all the profits have gone to management fees on Wall Street. So even if you turn that $1 million into $1.63 million, 63% of that profit, $600,000 profit, went to Wall Street.
Right. So, for example, when you say people are managing their own pension fund, what happens is they get a pension pot of $1 million, and then they invest it in things like BlackRock's iShares, which is an ETF. And an ETF is just, instead of buying stocks and paying, let's say, $5 a commission to own IBM, you buy an ETF managed by BlackRock, and they end up buying IBM, but they end up eating into 60% of the total return that you would have normally enjoyed, because they just take that off the top as a fee. And they have a huge marketing arm, and you see ads for BlackRock everywhere and their iShares ETF programs, and it's just adding intermediaries between you and your performance. But you have this woman in the ad who looks quite happy owning it, so you want to be like that woman, so you just give BlackRock your money. So the pension funds, again, the pool of capital, the savings, they get destroyed from fees from Wall Street. They get destroyed from the central banks that charge 0% interest rate. The low cost of funds are used by speculators like Warren Buffett, who uses borrowed money to buy companies for pennies on the dollar. The fact that they're involved in corruption, fraud, money laundering, environmental catastrophe never comes into the equation. And the cycle continues. The debt is now at an all-time high. The indebtedness of the stock market, the margin, is at an all-time high. The debt burden of various economies at an all-time high. The UK economy, debt burden, is now second highest in the world, second only to Japan. So the debts, these huge debt bubbles, every 5, 6, 7 years following new highs, they pop. Then you have a crash. and then the cycle repeats itself. But you need about 4 or 5 years for everyone to develop amnesia. You need that 4 or 5 year break. Now, everyone will say this next crash coming had nothing to do with the last crash. A lot of people who got wiped out during the last crash, they killed themselves or they're in prison or you never hear from them anymore. They're living in a gutter, so they're not a factor. The teenagers that are now in their young adults, they have no memory of it because they were high on drugs as teenagers. They have no idea what happened. So it's a new generation. And so just repeat the whole cycle.
Now, you often speak of interest rate apartheid, where, you know, these banksters get money from the Fed or the Bank of England or the ECB at 0%, or in fact, they sometimes get paid to borrow money from the central banks. And yet normal Joe Bag of Donuts or Joe Sixpack on the street, he has to pay, you know, up to 30% on credit cards or payday loans. And here we also see a fee kind of apartheid, because if you're a qualified investor, of course, you invest in a hedge fund, and a hedge fund takes, what is it, 20 plus 2? So 2% of assets under management and 20% of profits. Mm-hmm. Joe Bag of Donuts with his little measly 401k has to give 63% to Wall Street for the same profits.
Yeah, I hadn't quite looked at it that way, but yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, the average person, in terms of their stock market performance, if you just took a 15-year view, people do buy index funds, which are, for example, Vanguard is the pioneer in the index fund, and Jack Bogle created this idea. And the index fund, which is just buying the index, the Dow Jones index, for a very cheap transaction cost, outperforms 95% of all money managers and hedge funds over the past 20 years, 30 years. So that is something that people should consider. You don't hear a lot about it because it's not marketed as such. But that is. But so, what is your return in an index fund? It'll average 7, 8, 9% over a 20-30 year period. And so that's about what you can expect on your investments. People want to make, if they say, oh, I'm going to make 20% or 30%, but that means you're going to invite a lot of risk and risky, dodgy characters into the mix, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, and most people aren't Soros or Warren Buffett, and they screech and they run around and they panic, and, you know, whereas an investment of Soros's might go down 30-40% suddenly, you know, he's not going to panic as much because he doesn't desperately need the money like many people do. And, you know, but let's go back to this Blythe Masters thing, because, you know, the evidence that has emerged makes you think, well, maybe there might be hope one day for this silver manipulation story, because according to the document, this regulatory document, the enforcement officials plan to recommend that the commission hold the traders and Ms. Masters individually liable. While Ms. Masters was less involved in the day-to-day decisions, investigators nonetheless noted that she received PowerPoint presentations and emails outlining the trading strategies, the energy trading strategies. So there could be emails and PowerPoint presentations for the silver story as well. The bank investigator said, then, quote, planned and executed a systematic cover-up of documents that exposed this strategy, including profit and loss statements. In the March document, the government investigators also complained about what they said was obstruction by Ms. Masters. After the state authorities began to object to the strategy, Ms. Masters, quote, personally participated in J.P. Morgan's efforts to block the state authorities from understanding the reasons behind J.P. Morgan's bidding schemes. The investigators referenced an April 2011 email in which Ms. Masters ordered a, quote, rewrite of an internal document that raised questions about whether the bank had run afoul of the law. So she's putting all of this in emails, and they've found the emails of her basically showing her guilt. So this is why people are saying that Blythe Masters is about to be ousted, because if there's email evidence of her, I mean, well, you know, there's email evidence of all these UBS traders and Barclays traders manipulating LIBOR, and look what's happened to them. Not much.
Yeah, exactly. It looks bad. But then again, just like we've seen the tolerance of financial fraud increase, you know, we've seen the tolerance increase over the past 20 years. So 20 years ago, this type of case was certainly Jeff Skilling and Enron. Mm. They got in trouble. But just like the lessons from Enron were how to commit the same frauds on a bigger scale in a way that would be less obvious to regulators. Okay, so here we are 20 years later. And same crimes, same energy rigging, same town, Houston, same folks involved. During this time, not a single really of any of the banksters have gone to jail because they've learned their lessons over the years, have had to perfect their criminal behavior. And so here's Blythe Masters. We've talked about her many times. We've said many times she's committing fraud. And we say this without, you know, equivocation. And now, finally, it's come out. She's involved in massive fraud. She's got the emails covering up the fraud. So that's, you know, like, that's, again, a whole other layer of criminality. She committed the fraud and then covered up the fraud. But we've also, at the same time, we've had the rise of the banker king. You know, the Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein have been elevated to the position of gods. So can you prosecute God? That's the key. 20 years ago, it would have been a slam dunk. She would have been definitely going to go to jail. But today, in this environment, it's not so obvious, is it? Because the bankers have become godheads. And, you know, she's like a Medusa character. You know, she just snakes grow out of her head in infinity, in perpetuity. And if you try to corner her, she'll just grow another snake out of her head. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, even at the beginning of this whole financialization, it was the end of Nixon regime, and he, you know, was ousted from the presidency for covering up. It was the cover-up that did it in for him. But even though they have these emails, again, we have the interest rate apartheid, then we have the fee apartheid, and then there's the justice apartheid, because, I mean, many people in prisons in America, and it has the most incarcerated population in the world, many of them will be there on flimsy circumstantial evidence, not a slam dunk case like this where they're admitting to their guilt in emails. And here she could basically lay out her tracks are easily followed. She's stating it in emails to people that were covering this up.
Yeah.
And there's a slim chance that anything will happen to her.
Well, it's the infallibility argument that, again, since we live in neo-feudal times, in the old days, the Pope or the head of the church was claims infallibility, and you may have thought you saw this cardinal or priest commit something atrocious, but he's a man of the cloth. He's with God. He's beyond it. So when people say we're making markets or we're adding liquidity, they're using the infallibility argument. They're saying we're with God, we're with market fundamentalism, we're with the God of capitalism as we understand it. You can't get us.
Well, however, okay, Rupert Murdoch and the tabloids have devalued celebrity, okay. And therefore, it's at such a low level now, after all these reality TV shows as well, that in a way, this devaluation of celebrity has allowed all these old cases. Here in the UK, you see over and over these, like, presenter after presenter, BBC presenter after presenter, being charged with serious, awful sexual crimes, sex crimes, you know, pedophilia and stuff. But, you know, a lot of them, you'll notice these crimes were committed back in the 70s and 80s when there was more of a untouchableness about celebrity. Mm-hmm. They were not easily got to, and they were more godlike.
Right.
now there is nothing godlike about celebrities. They're a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. And, you know, Andy Warhol's famous saying that he stole from a Japanese film has come true, that everybody's famous for 15 minutes, so big deal. Right now we're in a state as well where, you know, people have a lot of faith and trust in bankers, and especially because of the precarious situation. They want them to save us from the disaster they've created. So there's a lot of people don't want to, because their own future relies so much on these bankers saving us from the situation, they don't want to investigate too hard into what they're doing to save us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, that idea that Murdoch debased the celebrity, and now they're all being, you know, they don't have the status that they had, and they're being dragged into these lurid crimes. And but the bankers are definitely held up, you know, even now, as gods. And when they make these statements, like Bob Diamond recently, you know, he was disgraced and thrown out of Barclays in New York, and the press covered the fact that he's trying to make do on $100 million a year. He said, you know, I was never in it for the money. And so they quote him, and they put that in the paper as if it's not like Son of Sam, serial killer, saying he was never interested in killing people. He just wanted to talk to the dog. Right? I mean, you know, it's like Bob Diamond, he never wanted to steal all that money. He just wanted to get, you know, he really liked the Barclays Bank logo, and that's what motivated him.
Yeah, that was, again, you know, I showed you the New York Times headline about these big crimes, that Enron-like crimes that J.P. Morgan has committed in the energy market, and they call it regulatory woes in the headline. Yeah. Then the New York Times, yeah. So Bob Diamond was driven out of the U.K., fled back to New York. He's living in New York. And the photo accompanying the article about him is him on a subway train.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's standing there with the people. He's been, you know, humiliated, and he's now more humble. And he has to take the subway to work, they make it seem like. Okay?
I mean, it's amazing that his PR firm can buy the New York Times like that. And yeah, they can just run a story like that, an advertisement for Bob Diamond. I mean, the New York Times is shameless in that way. And you can just easily buy them.
I mean, lower down in the article, they mentioned that he's just bought a $35 million apartment over Central Park. So, obviously, if you could afford a $35 million apartment, you don't really need to take public transport. But this is they're trying to create this humble sort of image for him. So, yeah, it is pretty shameless. And perhaps they'll do the same for Blythe Masters one day. But the fact that they aren't right now suggests that she is going to be Bob Diamond and driven out.
Mm. Well, if that's true, then what happens to J.P. Morgan? And also, while you were speaking there for a moment, I was thinking, well, of course they could pull. If they really got, you know, wanted to protect her, they could crash one of these markets and just throw the focus on some global emergency. If they wanted to do that.
Well, I tweeted, I think that Blythe Masters is to Jamie Dimon as Rebecca Brooks was to Rupert Murdoch. Mm-hmm. And if you see cuffs on her, if she has to do a perp walk about this, or, well, this document itself suggests that the regulators say she's committed a crime. She could be ousted, but like Rebecca Brooks, she'll get a massive payout, but much bigger than Rebecca Brooks. Only got like, you know, £2 million or something. You know, Blythe will receive like $100 million and retire somewhere, or show up running a hedge fund with John Corzine, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, she does seem to be a key figure. You know, the whole derivatives market and the commodities desk, and you know, we say London is the global headquarters for bank fraud, and J.P. Morgan is the biggest player in that fraud with $90 trillion in derivatives. And Blythe Masters is the key figure in that $90 trillion book of derivatives in one of the biggest banks in the world. in the biggest scandal scamming of the world. So she is, she really is the Wicked Witch, as we've called her many times. And so if she's tossed out, okay, can she be replaced? I don't know. I don't think so, actually. She can't be replaced. So would this be pulling on a string, you know, to start unraveling what's happening in JP Morgan? Is it really the Enron of this decade that we've been talking about? I mean, if she goes, is it going to set in motion a series of events that will see JP Morgan get blown up, which it should? They have $90 trillion in derivatives that they can't pay. The company's only worth $170 billion in total. They're involved in incredible amounts of fraud. Is it going to happen? I mean, two things that we've said for the last 10 years. Number one, that eventually people would be buying gold as a way to snuff out the banksters. Mrs. Wang finally stepped up and now is doing that. And we've also said that Blythe Masters and J.P. Morgan is the ground zero for global bank fraud. Now, Blythe Masters in this story is now pointing that out.
Yep, we were the first. We were the first. There are many pretenders following us, but we were the first to point that out years ago. Yep. So
it's true,
It seems like forever we've been talking about Blythe Masters and J.P. Morgan. And
everything we've said about them has now been vindicated. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, it's been totally vindicated. The story on Blythe Masters completely vindicates everything we've been saying about Blythe, Jamie Dimon, and J.P. Morgan.
Well, we were right once again. So now we have this. She's going to be out one day soon. We'll follow up on that. We're going to have to get Pierre Jovanovic back on the show to talk about this, because this is something he wrote the book on her, and he's been looking for an English language publisher, by the way, mm-hmm. but nobody would publish it because they were afraid of libel lawsuits. So now if she gets found guilty of this, it makes it very difficult to sue for libel, because you have to prove that you're not a fraudster or a person with a reputation to uphold. By the way, this is Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London. And this week, upcoming on the Kaiser Report, we are going to interview Frankie Boyle, the Scottish comedian. Mm-hmm. And I think it seems the number one question is about Scottish independence, which, you know, is a very big topic on the news here, because David Cameron is making it so. There, and George Osborne are up there, you know, talking down Scottish independence. Though it looks like the polls anyway, that nobody's going to vote for it anyway. But it seems to be a big story that they're talking it down.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems like, you know, the Scottish have tried so many times over the centuries for independence and were thwarted by, you know, some way, usually through violence. But now that all their North Sea oil is blown, it seems like a kind of, it seems not as a clear-cut case as it was before.
Yeah. Well, I've been tweeting about it myself a lot. I mean, for Scotland to become independent, it would be a great project for the Scottish people, and they certainly could be an incredible economy, and they don't need Britain. They don't need it. But I think that at the end of the day, they're just too tired. They prefer the handouts from Britain.
Well, you know, there is a lot of missed tourism dollar. Everybody chases the tourism dollar, right? Well, for example, when I was in Edinburgh, I went looking for Adam Smith's tomb, his gravesite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like almost impossible to find. It's in that little, you know, church and cemetery right off that main strip there. And there's a few little signs on the ground, but they disappear. So you have to go looking and marching through mushy, cemetery grounds to go find this Adam Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, he's one of the top five most important people of the past 1,000 years in terms of economics. And why have they not even promoted this, or, you know?
Okay, why is Donald Trump gonna be making more money in Scotland than any Scottish person will or has for 100 years? It's an American sleazy entrepreneurial casino guy who wrangled his way into Scotland to open up some ridiculously overpriced resort. Okay, Scottish people didn't think of that. Scottish people aren't going to make any money from that. So they're just too tired, man. They just want to lay down and die.
Well, in fact, you know, Donald Trump is the sort of person that espouses and misquotes Adam Smith. Adam Smith has been taken from the Scots and reinterpreted and misquoted into a huge, you know, boondoggle of fiascos of think tanks. So that, like, that Adam Smith Institute in the UK, remember we talked about that, where they're one of the biggest recipients of government handouts on these scam sort of like reports they write for them, and all sorts of projects, the Adam Smith Institute spinoff, this lobbying group that, well, they do various, they got all sorts of contracts to run schools or whatever in Afghanistan and made hundreds of millions of dollars, pounds profit, and spent like £5 on building the school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I just don't, I guess the Scottish people, they don't really have, what about Royal Bank of Scotland? You know, here's another asset that was turned by Britain into a cesspool of fraud and corruption.
HBOS
destroyed, there's golf courses destroyed by Donald Trump, the oil's been destroyed. So this is a country that is used to being peed on. They're not going to change.
Well, unless Max Kaiser goes back up there and claims Maxwell's castle.
Yeah, no, I'm willing to go get my castle. You know, the Maxwell clan, you know, is ready to go. You know, we're going to come back and retake what's rightfully ours. And I'm just thinking, as the whole idea that they couldn't do well unless they were tied to the British pound, unless they were had all these relationships with Britain, is completely false. It's a completely, you know, I mean, here's a guy in his dorm room started a $100 billion company called Facebook. Mm. That has a higher GDP than Scotland. So you're saying that there's nobody in Scotland who has a brain in their head that can't sit in front of a computer and think of something interesting and be a world beater? I mean, all you need to do is give every child in Scotland free internet access and a free laptop and say, you know, make us great. And within 20 years, you'd be one of the, you'd be outside of the bureaucracy and the nightmare that is Westminster. So you'd have to have faith in your children. It was what it would require. But they don't.
Yeah, but also we're supposedly in this time of a knowledge economy. I mean, when you think of the great thinkers in the Enlightenment, they're all Scottish. Mm. You know, if you think of the even the French Revolution was basically triggered by John Law, who is a Scottish guy. Mm-hmm. You know, even with the scams, they haven't really been the biggest of them. And they were the biggest of those scams of the South Sea Bubble and the French leading up to the French Revolution. They were behind all of those, ripping apart the global financial system then. So where are these big thinkers like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they don't see themselves as winners. They just see themselves as being on the breadline from Britain. So that's it's all perception. It's all in the brain.
Maybe it was also, you know, opposition often brings out the best in people and societies and groups. So they were at constant war with England for hundreds of years, which led to, you know, the likes of Adam Smith and Hume and Locke and all these guys.
So what is Frankie Boyle's position on Scotland?
Well, it's hard to tell. I think he's pro-independence, but mm-hmm. He makes so much fun of Scottish people that it's hard to... tell exactly his position, but we'll be asking him about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Exciting. Very nice. Looking forward to it.
I think I want them to be independent, you know.
But they're not going to vote for it, are they? The people are not going to vote for their own independence. So, you know, I don't know what you can say about that. I mean, it couldn't be any worse than it is now in Scotland.
You know. Well, I mean, it's weird how people, groups of people, when confronted. So even like in Australia, remember a few years ago, or within the last 10 years, it was put to referendum whether they wanted the Queen mm-hmm. of England to be their head of state.
Right.
And they voted to keep her as the head of state, which I always find bizarre. I mean, the Canadians, the Queen of England is also their head of state, and mm-hmm. apparently they like it that way. I don't know, but this is the nature of humans, I suppose.
Well, I mean, look, in the United States over the past, since 9/11, they've given up 8 out of the 10 primary Bill of Rights, right? Okay, they gave up unlawful search and seizure. They mm-hmm. gave that up. Free speech, they gave that up. Second Amendment, they're fighting for, although it's a silly fight because they want to own guns against drones, so that's not going to work. But all the constitutionally protected rights, they've just given them up. They've said, well, they haven't fought for them either. So there's nobody currently in the world, except for WikiLeaks, I would say, they're doing, or Kim.com, I saw his picture up there. You know, these are the people. Aaron Swartz was fighting the good fight, and then he ended up hanging himself when the MPAA wanted to put him into a gulag for 35 years for a very trivial, contentious transgression. So, you know, it's just not a lot of... Because, again, the stock market hitting new all-time highs buys a lot of complacency. You know, even people who don't own stocks, they look at that and they say, wow, I can be rich someday like Warren Buffett. You know, very few people in America own stocks at this point. And but it does a great PR job to keep people, you know, out of the way.
Yeah, the Kim.com is on the front page of Guardian.co.uk. It says Internet Outlaws, notes from the front line of the war in cyberspace. The battle for control of cyberspace is turning nasty, with young hackers, pirates, and activists facing long prison sentence. John Ronson meets some of them. And, you know, again, looking at the population and their role in this sort of thing, you don't see at all that much support from most ordinary people for the sort of internet activists, nor do they see a problem with the 30-40 year prison sentences for hacking into a website and changing a headline on the LA Times. They think it's perfectly acceptable to sentence that person to 30 years at $45,000 a year for the incarceration. They're, for some reason, taxpayers are very willing to spend $3 million, $4 million to lock up somebody for changing a headline.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, dear God, you spend $50 on some single mother.
Right.
They will shriek.
Yeah, the story came out that doctors are, you know, incorrectly pulling people's kidneys out. And they're not only are they not being punished, but the private hospitals that own these institutions are getting rewarded in a huge way. So, that, again, there's that apartheid wall. If you're a doctor and you're cutting people's legs off mistakenly, you get a huge bonus. If you're somebody who's fighting for free speech and you change a headline on in a newspaper or in the digital space, you go to jail for 30 years. So, again, it's this incredible apartheid wall, you know, that's running right through society, both in the digital space and the financial space. And what else did they say? Who else did they mention in this one that people are...
Well, that guy Weave that managed, Andrew Auernheimer, who's who calls himself a troll, and he was sentenced to 3 years in prison for basically publishing something from, I think it was AOL. It was their, but they were the ones that had made it public. Only he directed people to their public information available publicly if you knew how to search for it. So he got sentenced for that. They're talking about him. He while he was in prison, of course, he managed to hack into the TrueLinks system, which is the internal email system of the prison system in America. And he was allowed to use it, and he managed to get onto Twitter and the internet from there. Mm-hmm. Which, if you go to the prison website, you're not supposed to access the internet. You're only allowed some emails at a prison email address. Mm-hmm. He managed to somehow get onto Twitter, and then they put him in like isolation. But you know, they're talking about his sentencing before he was sentenced, where he, outside the court, he said, "Let's read some Keats. Poets and fanatics will be known." 10 minutes later, "I'm going inside. Let's roll." So he read some Keats, went inside. And now we're in the elevator. I hear his girlfriend say, "As Bill Hicks said, Hitler had the right idea. He was just an underachiever." Then she adds, "I'm being facetious. You should know, you should not kill anyone." So they're covering the fact of like this sort of underground sort of culture and way of talking and speaking and communicating. Mm-hmm. And these rebels and outlaws who have them against the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Kim.com, you know, he's clearly, he's the top guy in this space. And he was an internet entrepreneur, and he's been radicalized. You know, he tweets all day long about his fight is against the United States. That's how he characterizes his fight, that the copyright laws in the U.S. are detrimental to the progress of humanity, and that's who he's fighting. So it's rare that somebody can be so high profile and openly declare they are at war with the United States, as Kim.com does every day. So I'm sure, you know, this is, but at the same time, he's insulated himself in ways that are giving him this platform, and his business, the mega business, which is encrypted storage of digital files, is growing quite rapidly. So he's definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Well, there's also these other people, and John Ronson said that after Aaron Swartz's death, I became aware of a lot of other Aaron Swartzes out there, hackers and pirates and activists facing prison for their ideology of internet freedom. So he went looking for them, and that's how he came in contact with this troll weave, Andrew Auernheimer. And so sitting in the court before Weave, there was a guy facing drug trafficking charges, and he apologized to the court and said he had been wrong and he shouldn't have done this and blah, blah, blah. And then he says, so then Judge Wiginton asked Weave if he has anything to say, and he stood up. "I didn't come here today to ask for forgiveness. The court should be making amends to me for the harm and the violence inflicted on my life. Many governments that have tried to restrict the freedom of the internet have ended up toppled." So he does the exact opposite of what the system, the justice system and the prison penal system demands, a complete capitulation and stripped of dignity. And they want you to be, like Scottish.
Yeah, well, these are the kind of personalities that emerge during revolutions.
Yeah.
So, during revolutions, the people who are at the bottom suddenly become the leaders, and the leaders become at the bottom. So, if the revolution is going to proceed with some alacrity, then some of these people will emerge as very important historical figures. You know, who knew that before the French Revolution, Marat, would emerge, or Robespierre, 5 or 6 years before the revolution, he was basically just a civil servant. So the list goes on and on. So we could think, I think people before the French Revolution, had probably thought the chances of a revolution were 1 in 10 million against the state, against the king. It seemed preposterous. Here you have the state, the banksters, the copyright cartel. They seemingly without a bit, unstoppable. So we could be at an inflection point. Could be at a very historic moment.
So John Ronson was interviewing, had lunch with Weave a few days before his sentencing, and Weave said that he has no problem with 100,000 people dying to preserve my one friend who is brilliant. Like he believes that innovators should be preserved at the sacrifice of the many. So John Ronson asked him, do you really believe this? Where does this come from? Where does this thought come from? It's irrational. And we've shouted, it's not completely irrational. Society is driven forward by a very small number of innovators. I don't care about people who have nothing but contempt for innovators. I have no sympathy anymore for the dregs of society. I don't care if they live or die. So, yeah, it sounds like revolutionary.
Right.
Sweet.
You know, I think that this missing is that people's comprehension of the digital space. And you'd have to go back to people's incomprehension at what was going to be, let's call it the love space, pre-Christian dogma. So before this, there was no concept of love as a curing force as such. So then you had this incredible revolution at that time. You go forward, and now we're at a point where the digital frontier, what I've called the holy dial tone for 20 years now, we could be at that point where it just shatters open and consciousness is completely reinvented globally, instantaneously, because of what he calls the free thinkers or these new thinkers. And he says, well, is it worth 100,000 lives? You think about the Crusades of the past. People have killed millions and millions for ideas. And it is the modern world that we live in as is the result of these Crusades. Now, is this a crusade now that's happening in front of our eyes? It could very well be.
Well, that's a good point to end. Back in those days, we had the barbarians at the gate. Now we have the trolls at the gate.
Well, yes, the trolls, they are always trolling. So that's what, you know, that's the way it is. And there's always a Judas amongst us, isn't there? I think Bob Dylan said that.
Okay, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Bye, y'all.